So this is the last lecture, and I promise I'll teach you how to build experiment. But before that, let's finish like what we were talking about before. So last time we were talking about how we can use the stars or stellar objects like the sun and the Earth as a laboratory. We talked about forces that are mediated by a lot of matter onto something, right? And that's how, for example, like the thing that we are mostly using to mediate those forces are the Earth, and we try to measure like the properties of, let's say, two rubidium atoms in the Earth's gravitational field and also in the Earth's Earth-mediated like these new interactions. So today we are going to talk about radiation. And in this case, we are actually using the star. And so if you remember from our discussion of axions, this is what we get towards the end. Let me remind you again, like we are talking about masses that, of particles which are very, very tiny, with very, very weak interactions, and long-ish wavelengths. Okay. So these things will be useful for both the discussion of radiation and also like the discussion later about how to build experiment. So for today's class, we need to introduce a new parameter, which is this thing called GA gamma gamma, which is axion-photon coupling like this. Okay, so this is how an axion coupled to the photon. It couples to, so this is a dimension 5 operator. So each of the F is the electromagnetic field tensor, right? So, and as a result, they are dimension 2. So 4 plus 1 is 5. And here, like GA gamma gamma goes as 1 of FA, which is dimension minus 1, okay? Energy dimension. So such an interaction, mediated interaction between the axions and the photon. And this term here, if you write in forms that are maybe more familiar with people, is just an electric field dotted into a magnetic field. So it's an interaction between the axion and E dot B of the electromagnetic field. Okay, so such an interaction can come from a few different places, and the two main things can are like the heavy integrating out some heavy quarks, some PQ quarks, and one loop. And because it's a one loop diagram with two electromagnetic interactions, so these two are photons, then like you get this alpha over 4 pi, right? Because it's a one loop diagram, multiply this 1 over FA, which is the axion decay constant. And or like you can have these things coming from axion mixing with pi 0. And I think you guys worked a little bit with pi 0 interactions to a photon. This is also a one loop diagram which generates this pi 0 to photon interaction. So when you account for the mixing, again, like this effect is at one loop, okay, compared to 1 over FA. So that's how in both cases, the details are somewhat complicated maybe, but like the important thing that to remember is that this GA gamma gamma coupling, the axion photon interaction, compared to this 1 over FA, is at one loop, and this number is roughly 10 to the minus 3. Okay, so we'll be so for today's class, we'll be using this interaction, and which are roughly like a 3 order of magnitude weaker than even 1 over FA, and we'll see how different probes allow us to measure this interaction. Okay, and the first one is a radiation from the sun. So the sun is a hot object, and let's call it, this is the sun, and we know it emits radiation, and the radiation we know it has to emit is photon, right? So of course, like we know a lot about the sun, and let's say like this is where we are, but we certainly do not know like the sun to like incredible like extreme precisions, like so the amount of energy like lost in photon, for example, is 10 to the 33 erg per second. While we know like the sun doesn't emit additional radiation at rates that are, let's say, like a percent level of the radiation emitted in photons. On the other hand, if we look at these interactions, the axion is interacting with whatever medium that is the star at with an interaction constant that are so much weaker, right? Like it is suppressed by such a high scale compared to the interaction which is the ENM and also like a fine structure constant, right? Like it's a very strong interaction. So the question then becomes like, why would the sun be even good for this type of measurement, right? And the reason lies in the fact that the solar photon radiation come from a very restricted region. Okay, so the photon that we see from the sun, do they come from here, here, here? Where does it come from? This, right? So it comes from the surface. And the reason why it comes from the surface is because like if I have a photon that's emitted in the bulk, before it has a chance to get out, like it travels for a very short amount of distance, it will interact already and be absorbed and go to become another photon. And so the region where like a photon can escape from the sun is very, very limited. It's only very close to the surface. And how close? We can do a quick simple estimate, right? Like so I want to get to the interaction rate, which is the density of, let's say, like electrons in the sun, right? Times some Thomson cross-section, which goes as 1 over me squared. So this goes as number density of electron, maybe some fine structure constant squared over me squared, right? And this interaction rate, of course, is inverse of a distance scale for which like the photon has time to propagate, right? So if I get to the distance scale, which is roughly 1 over gamma, then we get something like this. The electron mass is roughly like MeV squared. So this thing is 10 minus 4. Okay. So the electron density in a stellar object, let's say gram per centimeter cubed, is usually a little bit bigger. But let me just take that as example. Then I have 10 to the 23, the Avogadro number per centimeter cubed. Okay. So centimeter, if you remember, is 1 over 10 to the minus 4 eV. Right? Micro eV is a meter. So if I plug in here, then what I get is something like MeV over 10 minus 4, 10 minus 10 is 3. I get 10 to the minus 12, right? eV cubed. Okay, I dropped one. So this is 10 to the 12. This is 10 to the 11, 10 to the 7. So this is 10 to the 5 over EV, right? Or this is known as 0.1 meter, right? Because micro EV is a meter. Okay, so what this tells you, of course, this is a very, very rough estimate, is that the photon will only be able to be coming out from like a very short distance from the surface, right? Much, much smaller than the solar radius, which is order 1 second or 10 to the 8-ish meter. Okay, so and that is the reason why the sun, we can even think of the sun as an object that can be emitting a lot of these dark matter radiation, right? The reason is that as you decrease the coupling, certainly every single layer is going to emit much less of this particle, but the amount of volume you have to emit this particle increases, right? So now if I think of like a emission, a production or emission, which has a rate that is proportional to some small parameter, let's say GA gamma gamma squared. Okay, so each layer has emission which is of course suppressed by some, this small coupling. But the distance you have to do this emission, which goes as 1 over gamma, goes as 1 over GA gamma gamma squared. Right? So now, if you take the emission times the volume that you can emit for range of GA gamma gamma that is not too small, right? This combination, the emission from each layer times the thickness of the emission region stays a constant. Right? So that's the why we can think of this, use this star to probe some light weakly interacting particles. Because as I decrease the interaction strength, though I'm emitting much less from each layer, the amount of volume increases. Now, instead of a surface emission, which is the case for the photon, right, I have volumetric emission from everywhere from the star. Okay? And this enhanced model volume cancels the decreasing interaction strength for a short range of parameters, small range of parameters, until the point where like this distance becomes so long, right, that it is much bigger than the solar radius, then you start to see a suppression. Okay? So that's the reason one, okay, which is this fact. Okay? Of course, we can probe couplings where, for which like this distance is even much longer than the solar radius. Okay? So why is that? Produces d, which are much, much bigger than the solar radius. Okay? So the reason for that is that the sun is cold on the surface. Well, it's not cold. It's somewhat cold. It's a 4,000 Kelvin. Or in EV unit, it's roughly 1 EV. Okay? Well, the solar core is places where nuclear reactions are happening all the time. And the temperature there is very much higher. Right, the temperature can go to keV or even larger, and in different stars, like the core temperature can be even bigger. Okay, and that is good because all of these interactions, which are producing these axions, for example, come with high-dimensional operators, and as a result, the interaction rate usually scales with temperature to a very high power. Right, you need energies in the numerator to compensate for this FA in the denominator. And as a result, for all, most of these particles that we want to produce, the solar core is producing particles at a rate that is way bigger than the rate they are produced on the surface. Right? And as a result, you also get an enhancement because of this ratio of rate. So T core is much, much bigger than T surface. And the rate goes as T to some high power. And that is how we can produce a lot of particles in the center, large with enough amount that can be experimentally relevant when we compare it to the cooling rate of via photon from the surface. So this consideration, these 2 points, are the main qualitative points which allows us to use stars as efficient emitters and use that to put very strong constraint on the axion parameter space. So the number that we get in the end, which I'm not going to go into much detail, is that this coupling has to be smaller than 10 to the minus 10 GeV inverse, roughly. Okay. So that gives you a sense of like how strong like these constraints are, because if you think of like the like dimensionless coupling as being something like an electron over this times this coupling, or like a temperature times this coupling, we are talking about coupling strengths that are 10 to the minus 13 to 10 to the minus 16, right? And the reason we can be sensitive to this weak coupling is because of these two facts that we're talking about as compared to the electromagnetism. Okay? So I'm going to show you some pictures towards the very end of these cooling bonds. But that's all the qualitative things I want to say about radiation and why stars can be a good laboratory for these type of searches. Okay.
Really stupid question. Why? What would happen if the energy was greater than that? How would that look like?
Sorry, what?
Why is that constraint so large? What would happen?
Yeah. So it's if the coupling is much bigger than like this 10^-10 GeV inverse, then you are going to produce a lot of particles from the solar core,
yep.
And the particles they are produced, they are going to leave the system and take away energy. Right. So if you are producing more than the solar luminosity in these particles, then you are clearly excluded because the sun will cool the phenomenon too fast. Yeah. Okay. And as a result, it's called, these things are usually called cooling bonds. Okay. Thanks. So that's about radiation. Now let's talk about experiments. Okay. So in particular, we'll be talking about the ADMX experiment, which I actually forgot what it stands for. But it is experiments which are designed to look for QCD axions in the range where like it is most interesting. And that is basically the range here. I write to you here. And it is rough, like especially it's going to be like this range where like the mass is order micro EV. The axion decay constant that we are interested in is something like 10 to the 12-ish GeV. And the wavelength of the particle is roughly a meter. So let me just circle these three numbers, which will be the things that we are interested in. Okay. So first, whenever we think about experiment, the first thing that we ask is, how am I going to collect the energy? Right, so I have a dark matter which is coming to my lab, right? So we talked about WIMP experiments like a CDMS. The WIMP particle comes in, right? Scatter with some the mononucleus, and bounce back. In this process, leaving behind part of its kinetic energy, right? So the kinetic energy of the WIMP is deposited onto the standard model targets, which leads to energy deposition in the detectors that we can try to measure. Okay, so in the case of the axion, of course, this is not a good idea, and because like they are so light, right? The mass is 10^-6 eV. If we are only collecting something like the kinetic energy of the axion, that will be 10^-12 eV. It is energy that there's no way we can ever pick up. Okay. So so what do we do? Okay, so where do energy come from? So in the case of the WIMP, the energy comes from kinetic energy. And this experiment is called a scattering experiment. And the reason is because they scatter with the target and leaving kinetic energy behind. The second type of experiments, which are a little bit better, okay, which are used for axions and also dark photons, are absorption type experiments, where I try to absorb all of the mass energy, okay, of the particle and deposit it into the detector. Okay, so when you have an absorption experiment, you absorb this energy, and the system heats up, right? So what you are trying to measure in here is some delta E, which leads to a temperature increase. Okay, so this is very much like when you go out in the summer, like you have a car, you get in the car, anyway, it's very, very hot because your car has absorbed a lot of solar energy from solar radiation, which heated up, right? So that's the type of absorption experiments. And here, you can do this type of experiments because the axion doesn't correspond to any conserved quantum number. Okay, right. In the case of the WIMP like a number density number is conserved. It's like a baryon number which is conserved. So you cannot absorb it because you cannot destroy a WIMP. This fact that WIMP cannot be destroyed is important because otherwise the WIMP, which has TeV masses and order one interactions, would decay if there's no conserved quantum number trying to protect it from decaying. Right? In the case of the axion, this conserved quantum number is not required anymore because the axion is so light. Right? So if we just compute decay rate of the axion, which goes as mass cubed over FA squared, if I put micro EV cubed over something like a 10 to the 12 GeV squared, right? So this is a 21, 42, minus 18, so it's like 10 minus 60 EV, okay? Well, the Hubble scale today is 10 minus 33 EV. So this is this has a lifetime automatically, which is 10 to the 27 times the age of the universe, so it will never decay, right? So for these particles, of course, I do not need to require that they carry some conserved quantum number. And as a result, they can be absorbed, and all of this energy can be deposited into the detector. Okay. So this is better than the scattering experiment because now you have more energy to work with. You have micro EV instead of something like 10 minus 12 EV, but it is still too tiny. Okay. There's no detector that we have that currently has the capability of measuring energy deposit of micro EV. So there is a third type of experiment, which will be ADMX here, which is called a conversion type experiment. Okay, and here, not only do I want an energy deposition which is equal to m, I want that this energy is actually carried by a single quanta, a single photon, with energy that is equal to the axion energy. Okay, so now instead of trying to measure some like a little bit of heat change, I'm trying to see if my detector contains a photon or not, right? And that is something that is much easier to measure. Okay. So let's see how we do that. Okay. So my goal, let me use a different one. So what is my goal? My goal is to turn a photon, turn an axion into a photon at the same energy. Okay? With some device. And the first question you will ask is, earlier you told me that it doesn't decay, but does this process happen in vacuum, right? So of course, like for axions, I need some background. So and in particular here, like I need a magnetic field background. So if you think about this interaction here, right, in a magnetic field background, it is basically a mixing between the axion and the photon, which is the E field. Right? So like the axion is oscillating and the E field will oscillate with it. Right? So the question now becomes, can I start with the axion and just get a photon in vacuum? Does this process happen in vacuum? Anyone?
From the Lagrangian, it looks it does.
Yeah, from the Lagrangian, it looks like you can, right? Okay. Should it happen in vacuum? If it happens in vacuum, then the dark matter are gone, right? They just all become photon, right? You definitely don't want that, right? So why doesn't it happen in vacuum?
conservation.
Yes, right. So the deep reason is energy momentum conservation, but what we remember is that the velocity of the dark matter, right, is 10 minus 3, so it's a non-relativist particle. Well, of course, the velocity of photon in vacuum, you know, is equal to c, right, which is equal to 1 in our unit. And this is a fast wave, and this is a slow wave. And they cannot convert into each other, right? I cannot never take a fast wave and convert it into a slow wave. And in terms of conservation law, we can see the dispersion relation of these two modes, right? Omega is a function of k. The photon is a 45-degree line, right? Like the energy is equal to the momentum in vacuum, correct? And the dark matter is a non-relativistic particle, so like it has a zero-point energy of ma, right? And then like as a function of velocity or momentum, its energy grows a little bit. So this is how it looks like in omega k plane, right? And here, this region, this thing is like 10 minus 3 times m. Okay. So this is how a dark matter looks like, and this is how a photon looks like, right? In this plot. And in this plot, you can see very easily, like I cannot really conserve energy momentum when I take this to anywhere like on this line, right? If I want to conserve energy, then I need to find some way to give me some momentum. Or if I try to do this conversion, then I need to get the energy deposited in something else. Okay.
We can also say that E dot B is 0 in vacuum.
E dot B is 0, like if the standard model photons, like in case where there's no axion, but like in a rolling axion background, in many cases, like E dot B doesn't necessarily have to be 0. Okay, but like here, like this is the simple thing that you can see, which does not only like apply to axions, right? It applies to any dark matter particles you want to convert to a photon. You need to somehow find a way to satisfy the energy momentum conservation. Okay, so you can see this thing. So this is in momentum space. Right, so this is the intuition, this is the k-space. You can also do position space. So the dark matter, the photon, has a De Broglie wavelength, which is equal to its Compton wavelength, which is equal to 1 over omega, right, for photon. The dark matter, on the other hand, has a Compton wavelength, which is 1 over m. Well, the De Broglie wavelength is 1 over mv, and v is a small number, right? So if I'm looking in position space, then what happens is the photon would have, sorry, maybe let me draw it this way here. The photon would have position space oscillation like this, right? So this is a photon, amplitude of a photon. Well, for the dark matter, the way in position space, the wavelength is super long, right? So it's basically a constant over this small number of oscillations of the photon. Okay, and if you look at this, basically you see another a way to see like why this conversion doesn't happen, because I can compute the overlap of the wave function. Go to y. The overlap integral of the wave function of the photon and the wave function of the dark matter, right? And a dx, and this goes as a sine ma, well, x times a constant, right? Dx from 0 to infinity, and this thing goes to 0, right? So you get positive, negative, positive, negative, and eventually they cancel each other. So this is how in position space you see the same thing, that this conversion cannot happen. Okay. All right. So what do we do now? Like, do we just give up, right? So let's just come back to this intuition here. The intuition says, like, the reason, like, I cannot convert dark matter to a photon is because they go at a different speed, right? So would it be good if I can change the speed of one of them, right? And or, like, in this plot, would it be good if I can change the dispersion relation of one of them, right? So which one do I change?
Speed of light.
Huh?
Speed of light, like in a matter.
Okay, so you want to change the speed of light. Like, you certainly don't want to do this because this is dark matter. If we can manipulate it, we have already detected, right? So we cannot do anything to it. So this is the only thing that I can change, right? So I need to manipulate light. And Einstein tells me, like, omega equal to k is always true, right? C is equal to 1. That's special relativity.
In vacuum.
Okay, so in matter, right? And actually, Newton already know, right? The prism of Newton is basically saying, like, different frequency light propagates different with a different speed in the prism in material, right? Such that you can turn a white light into a rainbow. Good, but is that good enough? Okay, it's not, right? Because the velocity change, like in a prism, is order 1. Right, like silicon has a refract index of 3, silica has a refract index of 1.4. They're very close to 1, and I'm certainly not changing this thing all the way here, right? So now what do we do? So we want to get this light to stop, right? So we want light to stop. Okay, and do we know how to do that? Or any wave? How do I get any wave to stop?
Cavity.
Huh?
Laser.
Yeah. So the way that you get it to stop is by using standing wave, right? So if you hold like a wire and somewhere, well, gun holds the end of the other wire like a. They are going to modes which are oscillating up and down, right? So you are going to have waves which are basically oscillating up and down like this, right? Like if we hold these two points in our hand. And similarly, we can do the same for light as well, right? If I now have two mirrors, which are basically the boundary conditions for light, then the light in between is just oscillating up and down. It has effectively stopped, right? So actually, this is something that is very important. Anytime you want to convert a slow wave to a fast wave, when you are converting like sound to light in your cell phone, for example, like the condition you are trying to create is always, I'm trying to make something a standing wave. And then like I can do this conversion between a slow wave to a fast wave. Otherwise, you will never be able to do that. OK? So good. So now I know I need a standing wave. And the way I can get a standing wave is by having two mirrors and then like let this mode oscillate. OK? So the reason why now I conserve energy momentum is because the space in between the two mirrors is like a lattice vector. Okay, it's a k vector, which is giving me this momentum mismatch here. In this picture, what I'm doing is basically I'm saying that I don't care about all of these. I'm putting a boundary condition here. And now I'm not integrating the sine all the way to infinity. I'm only integrating for half a wavelength. Of course, this is non-zero, right? And this is basically the idea of ADM max, okay? So ADM max is basically doing that, what they built is a cavity which have some mold inside, and this mold is a standing wave. And as the dark matter is oscillating, this wave is oscillating as a result, and you try to look for this photon, which is basically this oscillating electromagnetic field. Okay, so this is the most important thing for this lecture. We need to get to the some mode which initially propagated very fast to be a standing wave, and then we can do a conversion experiment. Okay, so there are all kinds of conversion experiments. I'm going to show you a figure in the end. All of these are trying to achieve exactly this. You are trying to find some way to get a standing wave in different situations. And of course, this is the easiest because I can just build it, right? So the axion Compton wavelength is a meter. And as a result, all I need to build is a meter box, right? Or like a cylinder, actually. But like for different wavelengths dark matter particles, let's say like a micron wavelength dark matter particle or kilometer length dark matter particle, this is much harder. And there are different devices we are trying to do to create light as a standing wave. But this, again, is the important qualitative thing that that I want to point out. OK. So with this in mind, we can compute the power coming out of this experiment. Okay, so like I showed you here, right? In order to facilitate this conversion between axion and photon, I need to put a magnetic field. Okay, and inside this magnetic field, axion is converting into photon, and we can compute like the power. Okay, so the power of axion going to photon, of course, depends on this GA gamma gamma coupling, right? It depends on the magnetic field strength, and it certainly depends the thing squared, and it depends on the dark matter density, right? There's no dark matter, there's no conversion. It better depends on the volume of the detector. And then, let's see, this one has dimension 3, and that thing is dimension 2, so it's 1 over ma. Okay. So that's how I get basically roughly like the power, conversion power between axion to dark photon, to a photon. Okay, so it has the right unit, and I can rewrite it. So this is a power, so it's like dN dt times the energy, where energy is ma, right? So I can get dN dt, which goes as, looks like this, okay? And the number of photon, of course, I can move the time to the other side. So now I get this equation, okay? This, again, is a very important equation. So here, the equation has a few parts. So this ratio, dimensionless ratio, it characterizes how strong is the interaction and how much like a dark matter axion wants to convert it into a photon. Okay. So this is something which characterizes interaction strength. Okay. The second term here is the dark matter density. And then we have the volume. And we have the integration time, right? And the scaling with these two are understandable because, like, of course, like the bigger the volume, the more volume we have, the more likely we are going to see a count. And the more time we have, like, we can see a it's more likely to see a count. And if we manage to get these quantities such that this combination is the number that is bigger than 1, that means that I can potentially think of an experiment to ever look for this dark matter particle with these parameters, okay, for B and for V and T. If, however, this combination gives me a number which is smaller than 1, then no matter what smart things you do to like get this power to resonate or whatever, you are never going to be able to find the dark matter because there's just not enough energy density in the cavity at all to get you enough count such that you will be able to claim that you have seen the dark matter. Right? So here, when I get this equation, of course, this is all signal power. This has nothing to do with background. Right? I haven't put in background yet. There are ways we can maybe mitigate the background. But like even without background at all, I still want this number to be bigger than 1. Otherwise, there's no hope. Okay. So we can plug in the numbers. So the numbers for ADMX, the magnetic field is 8 Tesla. The rho dark matter is the number that we know. It's equal to something like 0.3 GeV per centimeter cubed around Earth. Let's say I have a volume which is 0.1 meter cubed. That's the volume they have. But you can also know like this volume because we are looking for micro EV axions. And as a result, the effective volume is roughly meter cubed. Okay. You cannot make it bigger anymore, right? So then, like the integration time, let's say the total integration time is something like a year or 3 years, so it's 10 to the 8 second. So you can take all of these numbers, and in reality, there are some order one parameter which characterize the geometry, like how much like the dark matter wave and the cavity mode actually overlap with each other. But these are or just the small order one numbers. The important thing is that if we ask what happens when this number is equal to 3, we get that we will be able to sensitive to a GA gamma gamma that is as small as 10 to the minus 17 GeV inverse. So this is a ridiculously tiny coupling, right? And Planck, as you know, is like 10 to the 19 GeV. So this is almost as weak in interaction as gravity, in some sense. Okay? And that tells you, gives you a sense of the extreme power of these conversion type experiments. You will be able to get to really, really, really tiny interactions. Okay, so this is a for example, 6-7 order magnitude weaker than the ones we get from stellar cooling. Okay, and in this case, like the whole sun is trying to produce something, right? Well, like the dark matter density is much, much tinier. Okay, of course, unfortunately, right? ADMX is not a noise-free experiment. No experiment ever is a noise-free experiment. So we need to understand like what happens when there are noise. Okay. So we talked about why the signal can be non-zero. We talked about how we know that the signal itself is somewhat enough. Then comes the part that is actually the most important, right? When we try to design experiments, like how do I mitigate background? So here, there like in that case, like all we care about is the signal strength and the signal photon rate. But like in the case where I have an experiment which has a non-zero background, then the important thing that we want to work with is the signal power or the signal rate compared to the background power or the background rate. Right. So when I'm trying to build experiment, there are two things I want to do. One, make bigger, right? Or make the thing smaller. So the way that I make a P signal bigger is by using a resonator. Okay. And the thing that you know is if I have a resonator, the signal power goes as the quality factor times the signal power just without a resonator. Okay. So when I have a resonator, the small signal power, which is oscillating, is now built up in a very narrow band by this the quality factor of the resonator. Okay, so it's just oscillate and it keeps oscillating and increasing, right? On the other hand, when we build a resonant experiment, right, the region of frequency where like it covers is narrower, right? So like with each resonator experiment, right, like if my quality factor is Q, then the bandwidth goes as 1 over Q, right? So this is when you, let's say like you have a glass of water, right? And you are trying to sing and trying to hit the resonance, it gets harder. Well, like the effect is bigger, like when you hit the resonance, like the glass shatters, right? But it's much, much harder to hit the resonance than just singing randomly, right? Okay, so that's basically this effect. A resonator can enhance your signal strength by a factor of Q, but the bandwidth as a result is going to decrease as 1 over Q. Okay, so if we go back to that equation there, so though I'm increasing the signal power, because my bandwidth is smaller, right, the amount of time I can take in each single band, right, goes down as 1 over Q if I want to scan, right? So like if I have Q equal to 1 experiment, like I just let it there and it will be, I will be sensitive to all of dark matter at any frequency. However, now if I have a resonator, like I need to go through like each single like a frequency beam, and then the amount of frequency beam is Q, so each one of like the frequency beam, I can only spend 1 over Q of the total integration time. And that's how you see like this thing doesn't help if you have no background, right? Because the signal power times T in that band is a constant. Okay. So this doesn't help if you don't have a background, but if there is a background, of course, if I make this bigger, like this ratio is going to get bigger and I'm going to do better. Okay. So the second thing is make a background smaller, and there are a lot of different type of background for these experiments. So there can be thermal background, there can be quantum noise, and there can be just some detector sensor noise, electronic noise, all kinds of things like that. Okay, and when you are building experiments, you need to think about all of them and make sure that all of them are small enough. Okay. So for ADMX, the one that is most the worst is thermal noise, which has a noise power of KBT, where T is the temperature of the system, right? Like, of course, I can not really get a resonator at absolute zero temperature. So I'm always going to have some thermal noise times the frequency band you are looking. Okay, so if I take the thermal noise background and plug in to the computation of signal to noise, then like I can get the following relation for GA gamma gamma, and I'm just going to write it. The final answer. So I have something like this. Okay, so this is all the things that my experiment depends on. Okay, so it depends on the dark matter density, as before, right? It depends on the volume. It depends on the integration time. So now the integration time dependence is change that's now like only like t to the minus 1/4 instead of t to the minus 1/2. That is because as you are integrated for longer, your signal rate goes as t, your background rate will grow as t as well. So the signal over noise it only goes as t to the 1/2. And as a result, like that scaling has changed. So the bigger the magnetic field, of course, like it is better, right? Because the interaction strength is bigger. You want a detector which is as cold as possible, right? The system temperature, like if it is cold, there's less noise, it helps you. The quality factor, the bigger it is, it's better. So in reality, this quality factor is roughly like 10 to the 5 for ADMX. Of course, you want like a bigger volume, but the volume again is set by the axion decay const, axion wavelength, right? So you cannot really change the volume. Okay. So if we optimize everything, oh, and this this just says like I want the signal to noise to be order 10, such that I can be sure like there is a detection instead of some like a random statistical fluctuation. Okay. So if I just plug in all of these numbers, we get this thing to be 10 to the minus 16 is GeV inverse. Okay. So compared to that, you see that they really did a great job controlling all of the noise, right? Like it's only like an effect of a few worse than the ultimate theoretical possibility. And it is also like, as you will see, what we actually need to actually look for like a QCD axion, okay? And this is something that they already achieved, okay? So, why, okay? Why do I need this, right? Yeah.
Yeah, just going back to this argument. So in principle, I can have this conversion vacuum. I just have to match my field. Very accurately, right? Because that would be like pi
indicator,
basically.
You want to match the field?
Well, B field. I mean, I still have like two gammas. I mean, you can think of it as a pi indicator, right? Pretty much.
Oh, so you want to put the momentum in the B field?
Yeah.
Yeah, then like you are going to be oscillating this B field at micrometer, like a meter-ish like a wavelength, right? So that is actually possible. And that's what people are trying to do. So basically, instead of like having a static B field as a background, you are trying to load a cavity already with one mode as a background and try to see like the axion converting into a different mode.
Yeah.
And that is something people are doing. And but like it is much, much harder to mitigate as a background. Yeah. Yeah, good question. OK, so. So yeah, let's come back to this, right? Like we get to, this is the experimental number. And then like, what about the theoretical number, right? So the theoretical number that we know is 10 to the minus 3, 1 over FA. And FA is something like 10 to the 12 GeV. So this is like 10 to the minus 15-ish GeV inverse, right? For QCD axiom. In reality, like there are some order one numbers, which actually like can change that number by one order of magnitude, and but like this is how you see that the experimental sensitivity, which is now meaningful, okay, for the QCD axion search, okay. So that's pretty much all I want to say about how to build an experiment. We started with like how dark matter can potentially convert into a photon, right? And we started by like talking about scattering experiment and conversion experiment, and why do we need a conversion experiment? And then we talked about why this conversion doesn't happen in vacuum but can potentially happen in a detector. We talked about the standing wave, which is really, really important. And then we talked about the ultimate sensitivity of any detector whatsoever possible. And that is this equation here. And now like if you have different background, you can try to mitigate the background and try to get somewhere close to that. And that is the ADMS number. So now I'm going to show you some pictures if I manage. so that you know like what is actually happening in realistic plots other than the ones that I'm drawing over there. So let's try to see if I can get it to work. I think I need to get this thing to go down, right? How do I do that? Thanks, Mateus. Thank you. Perfect. Oh, and I got to use this thing. No, this is not what I signed for.
But it's still loading.
Yeah, it's still loading. Let me. It's not working.
It should be USB-C. I think it's another cable, actually.
Huh?
You want to try this one?
This one. Okay. Oh. Now it's working. Okay. So now let me show you some realistic sensitivity curve and a real experiment. Okay, so this is the Dinah experiment that we talked about. And this is the Wien parameter space. So remember, we talked about how these sensitivity curves look like. So this is the 1 over m scaling that I was telling you about, like at high masses. And then this is exponentially decaying of sensitivity at low masses, right? So so all of these curves look somewhat like this. And the xenon ones are performing better at higher masses, while the silicon ones like allow you to maybe go to lower masses, as you can see. Okay, so the thing that we are most interested in is the Higgs-Neel, but unfortunately it's somewhere here, which is below what we can detect it for now. Okay, so so this, on the other hand, is the axion parameter space. So the x-axis is the axion mass. So y-axis is the GA gamma-gamma coupling I was showing before. So the region where it's most interesting is somewhere here, right? Micro EV, milli EV, something here. So and the corresponding coupling for different axion models, so these are two different axion models which produce a little bit different GA gamma gamma, will be somewhere like between like 10 minus 16 and 10 minus 14. Okay. So so that's the range we are most interested in because of the misalignment mechanism, right, that I told you about. And as a result, this is the region where like there are the most experimental effort, right? So this one, for example, is the ADMX experiment I talked to. I was explaining earlier, which get to GA gamma gamma that are below like 10 minus 15 GV inverse. So this is the best we have for now. And of course, we want to cover all of this band and hopefully find that QCD axion dark matter in this region. So we talked a little bit about the cooling bound. So these ones are like the cooling bound, and they always have this type of shape. Especially for the case of the axion. And the reason is that when this transition happens at the temperature of the star that we are using. Okay, so here, for example, is the solar temperature. So if we have a mass of the particle which is below the solar temperature, the production of it only depends on the energy of the particle instead of the mass particle. And as a result, all of these cooling curves are flat towards the left, right? Apart from dark photon, which is a little bit different, but like for here, like for the case of the axion, they are always flat towards the left. On the other side, you have this exponential dependence, and that's because like when the particle is heavier than the temperature of the star, the chances of like the star producing this particle goes down exponentially, because now you are relying on, again, the Boltzmann tail of the distribution, okay? Like in the case of dark matter production in the early universe. So this is why these curves look like this. Okay, so I talked about cooling and constraint and the dark matter searches, and now let's see the last figure. So this is a different type of coupling. This is a scalar coupling between a light scalar with an electromagnetic field. So, and the thing that I want to highlight are actually the gray ones instead of like the colored ones. So the gray ones are, the light gray is the fifth force constraint that we talked about, right? Like the, so these different constraints are different force measurement between objects. So for example, somewhere here is, I think, like the force between is an experiment called Luna laser ranging, which is measuring the force between the sun, well, the force between the sun and the moon, and it has a shape which is going away exponentially on one side and power law on the other side, and the power law you can see better here, with the center being basically the distance between the Earth and the moon. So that's why like all of these fifth force constraints are roughly like this. So here like there are some other objects, but eventually it all goes away like linearly at low masses. There are also these edgewash experiments or AVP violation tests. So including this one microscope, all of these experiments has flat sensitivity down to low masses because they are measuring a force which are fundamentally different compared to gravity, right? So you can use that trick to cancel the gravitational force, which allows you to probe forces even with infinite range. So that's all I want to say. We talk about forces, radiation, and experiment. And these are the future. And a lot of things are happening or hoping to happen. So all of these shaded region from before are actual constraints that we already obtained. These lines with light shade are the experiments that we proposed, hoping to cover the QCD axion band. So there are this RSF, SRF like a detector, which are basically trying to convert a radio wave, like a magnetic field, into a different mode in the superconducting cavity. And that's basically the thing that was mentioned, asked about. And there are these future versions of ADMX. There are things that work on higher masses. And you pretty much see that we have some idea to cover the whole QCD axion band, apart from this region, which is still like theoretically interesting, right? Like it's around a milli electron volt, where we really have no clue what to do, okay? And the reason is not we cannot build like structures at milli EV, which will be millimeter length scales. And we are very good at building things at millimeter length scales. But the fact that terahertz photons are extremely hard to detect. And so far, we have no way that we know to see them with certainty. And that's what people are working on, and especially the detector technology people are working on to get this region here. And hopefully we'll be able to find the QCD axion. That will be very exciting. And then we will know what is dark matter. And we'll just keep trying until we either succeed or fail. And then we jump on to something else. that's all I want to say. Thank you for taking this class and your interest.
Yeah, last question. So what about this white region on the right side of the yellow?
Oh, like this region here?
Yeah.
So these will be like axions which somehow receive a mass from some other contributions, which are not very well motivated.
Uh-huh.
And as you can see, like there are a lot of constraints, like which existed because like cosmological considerations, but not really like there are not really many people trying to like really see like what to actually do to like cover all of this parameter space, like because yeah, we don't really think like there's something there. Okay, that's all. Thank you.